Testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Let's see now, what was I going to get back to? I keep moving.
This is a continuation with Bob Hatcher, and we're talking about Kodiak and some of his experiences.
Some of the things, I know I'm rambling, but you can be, hope this can be picked out, but some of the things, like Ron had asked me, how was things in the military when I first went in, which was in back in the 40s, and strangely enough, I had two brothers in. We all three of us was in the service at the same time, almost the same time. At least I went in before they got out. My two older brothers, they went in the Air Force. The one that was too young, he volunteered and moved his age up and went right along with him. And they stayed together till they got ready to go overseas, and they discovered that they were brothers, and they separated them. And then one went with the Red Ball, and the other one with General Patton's 3rd officer there. And he retired 30 years. The other one got out. But to mention some of the things that were in the Army, when I first went to McClellan, I grew up in the state of North Carolina. At that time, things were more prejudiced, or whatever you call it. But in the state, you kind of understood those things where you live, and it was not really bad in the state of North Carolina. We would go to schools, we went to separate schools, separate churches, and separate everything was separate. And you ate in separate restaurants, and we thought that was just a fact of life. However, we had other friends there, occasions and others, and in fact, I worked for the bank, First National Bank, there in North Carolina, and he had two twin boys, and I used to drive and chauffeur them around, and I could go in places with them, and then they would tell me that I could not stay in there because I was, at that time, they call you colored, but due to the fact that I was with them, they said, well, he can stay or we'll stay. So I had those experiences when I come up. As a kid, I had experiences where they call you to the end name, and they'd call you this, that, and the other. Sometimes you'd have to fight, and I did that. We'd be walking to school, and the other kids, the white kids, would be riding on the buses, and we'd be walking. They'd spit out the windows on us because the black schools did not have buses. Then I remember seeing that change where we did have buses. And in fact, I drove a bus there in the state of North Carolina when I got into high school, and after got buses. But that. Right in the area where I lived, we had just as good of friends right there as I got that I've seen anywhere, like even here in Kodiak. But you know, those was out in the country. That was a real minority group of people that you had that close ties with, because the moment you started to branch it out and getting into the more publicized area, then you could see that division line. The line of division comes among kids when they start reaching around 12 and 15 years old. Before that, you play together and you do it and all together, and you don't think much about it. But when you get that age, then that's where that division starts coming from. And because of whether you're black or white in the northern state, I mean in the southern state. But going into the Army, to me, it was the same as the way where I lived. And so it was nothing unusual for me to see this type of situation of separation and because of color you go this way. But some of the northern people where things were a little different, they had a lot of problem with that, and it created the problem, because in those states, certain states, it was not that way. And the military realized it too, but it was still in the military. And I'll never forget when I went to Fort McClellan, Alabama, we were all in one company. The blacks were in one regiment in one company, the whites were in another. But when we got ready to train for bivouac and getting ready to go overseas or out for training, we all trained together. But when it comes to the barracks or the tents you just slept in, it was separate. And then we had our separate even mess halls in some areas. And up until the time comes when we go overseas, and then they couldn't separate you. So we all went the same way. The one thing about it, they'd separate you if they could, but there are certain conditions that you can't separate one nationality from another, and they did, and that's the way it happened a lot in the military. So either you go together or nobody goes, and because there was not any means for the separation. There in Alabama one time, we were out on bivouac at nighttime and maneuvers, getting ready before we went overseas. We all stopped by a hamburger joint, and to get some hamburgers. The white troops that we were with, they could go up, they could get a hamburger. The black troops, they would not serve us a hamburger. Here we were there training for that. And I remember that very vividly, and we were out at bivouac that night, and we stayed overnight, not too far, and this was out of Alabama then. And this place, when we got ready to come in from our bivouac, and we came back past there, somehow or another that place got burnt down. So I don't know who burned it down, but I got a good idea that some of the troops. But anyway, they couldn't serve anybody else hamburgers. That's one of the things in Alabama, you find that it was really bad in those areas. The Buffalo Division, which was there, and they went down there and they had a lot of the prejudice that was in the military, and they'd go into the towns and they started tearing up things because they were not going to be treated like they felt down there, like you were dogs. And so what they did, which I think I've heard this from the Buffalo troops, they shipped them out of there and shipped them overseas because they were tearing up everything, whether they were pretty well trained or not. Now, that was told to me. I was not in the Buffalo Division, but I went into the same area they did. Hmm. But getting around to a lot of the things that went on, again, when you were brought up that way, you think that's the way it's supposed to be. But now that after being away for so long, and then you get away from a lot of that, and it began to change, and it changed even before the president started to sign the proclamation, which was President Truman, to take care of the discrimination in the military. I, even in the Aleutians, where I was, I think maybe because I was just one, I guess I was the minority of the whole group, and even the shop I worked in, I was the only black that was in there. There was not another black in that shop, especially in the tradesmen, and I had no problems. I got along fine with everybody. So really, some of that I didn't see. During the time of the Civil Rights March and all that, I was in Alaska. I only know what little I saw on TV and what I read in the history books. So after leaving again from North Carolina, I did not go through what the people in the southern states went through during this early, late 50s and 60s and 70s when all of that was going on. We did not have that here in Alaska, and in western states, even like Seattle, Washington had. But anyhow, funny, kind of some of the things that really makes you perk up. But I remember when I first come here in Kodiak, it was small, and maybe there's 15,000 people here. I don't know, it wasn't 15,000. There was about 20, maybe 1,500 or 2,000 people, maybe, including village and downtown, a little small village. And they used to have the clubs in the base had more people. We'd have a club, civilian clubs and marine clubs and officers clubs, and we'd all have Christmas parties and dancing. And I'd been so accustomed of doing what everybody else did, I didn't think nothing about it. So one night I was dancing, and I like to dance. I've always danced all my life, and I was dancing at what they call the Momart here in Kodiak. And I was stopped by a guy because I was dancing with some military friends and a young lady that was a good friend of mine and his wife, a whole group. I had a group dance, group that I danced with, told me that blacks and whites couldn't dance together. And I said, and that was really a surprise to me when I ran onto that in the Momart. And I also remember when I was dancing at the civilian club one Christmas Eve night, and the manager came over and said to me, he said, you can't do that. And I asked him, what was he talking about? And he said, well, you can't dance with white in here. I said, what do you mean I can't dance with white? And he said, well, that's my friend. And they said, too. So we all left. So the next day, we called the captain of the base and had a meeting with the captain of the base at the time and all the civilian heads. And the captain of the base told the civilians that, after President Truman had signed that proclamation, that the president took care of that for them, and as long as they were on that base as a civilian, they could not discriminate. If they did, that they would not know anything about it. If so, they would fire them and send them off the base. So that took care of that on the base. Then what took care of it downtown was, believe it or not, back in, I guess, early 50s, 60s, they had what was known as NAACP now is also, which I learned about after the fact. It's been going for years, and it's an organization black organization type, for to help try to break down the racial barriers. And so but they started an organization here from out of Anchorage, and then there, a lot of people belong to it here. So when they brought the deal, when they approached me on the deal at the Beaumont, well, I just turned that over to them, and we that was ironed out. There's no, you know, they said that, you know, Alaska didn't, it was in Alaska, Alaska didn't do those things. Anyway, they were told from higher up somehow, but that never happened again. The funniest, and one of the things that really hurt me, that I made me realize then that so much difference was there, was one time I came in town here, and that was when I was working, and I went to the American Legion Club, which is not the one here now. It was, at that time, it was in the back of a club, a main club, I think the Mecca Bar. And I went in with a white friend of mine, and he and I didn't drink then, I don't think. Well, I didn't drink until I was 25. But anyway, I was having a glass set up, and he had a drink, and he worked there. And he was married to the magistrate, who is Mabel Fenner, who used to be the magistrate here in Kodiak. At that time, they had no judges, not the magistrate, and her husband worked with me on base. We went in. The bartender refused to serve me a drink because he said, I can't serve him in here because he's colored. That's the word he used. And I just couldn't hardly believe that either. But we left, and we got up and left and went out. And so I immediately the next day went and reported that to the magistrate, and I turned it into Alaska headquarters. And we shut, a lot of people don't know that, but we shut down the American Legion. A lot of people don't know that happened. I said, I know it happened. Then after that, I had no problems. To a certain extent, you run into a little minor incident. Another thing that really bothered me is when I got ready to join the Elks Club. I had been asked several times to join the Elks and join the Masons and by our white friends, and I didn't know that there was really, didn't think about it being that much of a difference. But for some reason, I just never did admit to being sponsored to the Masons here, which was all white. And the Elks, I didn't do that either. Up until here, maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, I guess it was, whenever I did some of the leading Elks and the exalted rulers, they asked, wanted to sponsor me. So when I did decide to be sponsored to the Elks, I was turned down because of the fact that I was black. The black balls, the way they did it, and the majority of the people there, I think it only took 3. Well, it so happened that I found out it wasn't an idea that anything I had done, because not that I'm perfect or anything like that, but I've been a good citizen here, and I've always helped. And I've helped build Alaska. But at that time, I found out that the ones that blackballed me said personally, and that you're not supposed to find out, that they didn't want no blacks in there. They used another term. But I found them a little inebriated, and that's how I found out. And I started to file a suit against them and decided, well, that's okay, so I didn't do it. So I continued working. Then after some of the younger group got in, then I was sponsored, and I went right through, and without being, I guess I was the first black person to become a member of the Elks here in Kodiak. I'll have to give a lot of that credit to Ole Johnson, Tom Sweeney, and several others that were my friends, but that supported it and went along with it, and that were 30-year members and looked at that part. And then as far as the other racial things, I haven't had any problems here. Those are just little incidents that come up against me at the time, but hey, everybody go and do just about everything that they want. I will say, at one time they had a town club here that they said you could only be a member to go in that, and that was when I first come in, 50s. You couldn't go in the town club unless you was a member. You couldn't get to be a member if you was a black person, because they would not let you, would not give an application to become a member. So they kept that for a while until after the military and a few of us come in, we got that changed. So that was just maybe a couple of 2 individuals that did that. But it was not the sentiment of the community, by no means. And so those things. But other than that, that's basically the problem that I ran into. And like I said, the military, and it was there. You just learned to live with it at the time. And that brought a lot of humility among different races of people. When you find each one out there fighting and doing the duties that each other's doing, one doing just as well or even better than the other, they find out that everybody's human. And then that brought about a lot of change. And I'll have to say that I'll take my hat off to President Truman, who had the guts enough to come in there and say that there's no going to be, but there's still, we have still got a long way to go in a lot of the areas and in a lot of the states, and that's what we want to do. We want to foster and do right and do the things for everybody. And one of the few things I want to mention is a lot of first in the things here. In the Pioneers, I'm a member of the Pioneers. My wife and I, my past president of the Pioneers, and also president of VFW, past post commander of that, the state adjutant. And my wife and I were told, which we never thought nothing about, after we got in, actually the bylaws of the Pioneers were so that no blacks, nobody other than Caucasian could join the Pioneers, even the natives at that time, at one time. But then natives were in it, and then I found this out after I got in there. We joined the igloo here in Kodiak, and when I went to Palmer for a convention, there was a lot of people there that didn't realize that there was any blacks in the Pioneers, and here I was there, Pioneer Igloo President from Kodiak, reporting from our igloo over here, and I raised a lot of eyebrows because the people was not aware of it. And I'll have to tell this because it was really fun. When we were given our reports, there must have been 300 to 500 people in there. And I got up on the stage when they called on me to give mine, and I was giving my report. And I looked out in the audience and I said, and I knew I could tell that the people, you can sense and you can tell when there's an unevenness or any thoughts being going on. A lot of people don't know that unless they're like myself, I can tell it just as good when I walk in and start talking with a person, how he feels basically towards me as far as black and white or yellow and green or whatever. But you can sense that. But anyway, I had within a place up there in Palmer, and I walked through, and a couple of ladies that were sitting at the bar and some others sitting over there. And when they saw me come in, they said, one looked around and said, there's a black guy. And I walked on past, and then they said, he must be in. I could see, read the lips, and they said he must be in the Pioneers. So that night when I gave my organizational report, I got up and I looked out in the crowd and all those people standing there, and I said, well, I told them who I was, I was the president from Kodiak, Alaska, and I said, in order to break the ice, to my mind told me this, to look out there and get everybody to laugh. So I said to them, I said, when I stand up here and look out there and look over the audience, I said, all of you look the same to me out there. I used the same. In fact, they all looked the same because I was the only black there. I was the only minority in that sense. And so everybody, when I said that and laughed, that brought the whole building down. And from then on, when I finished my report and came off the stage, everybody was shaking my hands. And from that day on, and I was told by the Grand Igloo President that my wife and I were the first two to join the Pioneers of Alaska. And we were told by a lady that was named Sis Harris that used to be here, that come here years ago, and Ted Wiley, who came here in the 30s, and they lived here in Kodiak, and they always encouraged us to get involved in Kodiak, and if I ever had a chance to join the Pioneers, I understand what she meant, and I understand what Ted meant at the time. And so we have been active here in Kodiak, and I've enjoyed our life here, and enjoyed raising a family here. My wife got on the city council and stayed and decided not to run anymore. She's been very busy in politics for a while, as she was. But I have been kind of the quiet type person and to go ahead and do my work and have a good time in the community. But that was just a couple of little of the things I run about the prejudice that I ran into, and I know some have other stories that was much worse, but after all, it's nothing that you can't overcome. You can overcome those things and continue in life and continue to live on. Alaska's been good to us. I may have said that before, and it's been good to me. Now that I'm retired and have a safety consulting business and still living here, and probably will continue to live here, because really this is home. So, Ronan, if you got any specific questions you want to ask me, I'll give you a chance. I've been talking and now, but I'll hold up.